Take a look at the rush bots. That'll be page 137. In the second column, Amar Rav Nachman Moshe Tikein. So that entire paragraph pretty much is a restatement of the same issue, the same position of the other Rishonim. The Tikein over here doesn't mean that they ordained it, that it didn't exist before. It existed before, but it didn't have a particular nusach, and they created the nusach. That's the basic answer, the matbea answer. And take a look at the second paragraph. L'chiyotze b'zeh pirish Rashi zal b'yuma. Gavi birkas avoda, shoya avodas kohen gadol. D'hainu ritzei, shalohaya mevarcha al zeh hanusach sha'anu omer mosa. All right, he cites Rashi, who gives a similar explanation. Now, let's look at what he says from that point on. Aval yesh medrashos she'omrim she'habrachos lo niskenu ella. Now the next word over here reads al. Ella al she'nichnasu la'aretz. Obviously, the word al is very difficult to translate. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Thus, one can conclude that there's a mistake here. Not that the Rashbats made a mistake, but in the manuscript. And a correction is in order. Instead of al, one should say ad. That's the position that he's quoting. That these brachos were not ordained until they entered the land. V'tikein Yoshua birkas ha'aretz. V'nivne beis ha'migdash, and then the beis ha'migdash was built. V'tiknu David u'shlomo birkas boni Yerushalayim. The Ode Echtov Mizela Kaman, V'siyat Dishmaya. He says, I'll return to this theme later on. Now, on page Resh Pevav that he refers us to, in the context of a different discussion, the relationship between the first three brachos and the bracha of Hatov, Ametiv, in Birkas Hamazon. In the second paragraph, I will reisi b'yalamdenu parshas elamase, ad shelo nichnasu la'aretz, that until they entered, before they entered the land, hayim avarchin bracha achas, they only said one bracha, hazanas hakol. Mishenichnasu la'aretz, once they entered the land, hayim avarchin ala aretz, v'yal hamazon. Mishacharba Yerushalayim, Boni Yerushalayim. Mishenikbru Haruge Beitar, when they buried Haruge Beitar, Hosifu Hatov Ametiv. Then he says, Vishema Dahachikamar, Shekodim Nichnasu La'aretz. Maybe the meaning is that before they entered the land, Lohayim Avarchin, Alzehamad Beah, Ela Birkas Hazan. Maybe the meaning is that, this is the classical explanation, that they didn't use this matbea, except they had one matbea for Hazan. I will pirkas ha'aretz ha'yim mishanen ha'matbea, b'vakashas rachmim, shetinaten lahen. But the pirkas ha'aretz, the matbea was different, because they didn't have the land yet. So it was in the form of a request. V'chein ha'yim espalim al ha'migdash, and also they would pray for the migdash, she'yibana b'mehera. And when they entered the land, then they ordained the matbea of the Birkas Haaretz, the way we say it. The idea that he mentions over here is that it's a possibility to say that, although, as I said, none of the Rishonim that we've learned actually learned this way. But we considered it as a possible explanation that perhaps Birkas Hamazon did go through some type of a development. I'm just throwing this out as a possibility, which he mentions over here. But we understand that that's not the way the Rishonim are learning. We're just throwing it out as a theoretical possibility. Which is to say that it's true that all the three brachos are d'oraisa, because they learn from the psukim. That is Hazan, that is Nodelcha, and Yerushalayim. That is true. However, does that mean to say that from day one you have to have all three brachos? Well, clearly, you didn't have all three brachos. The only bracha that you had was Hazan, which is interesting. And that was not apparently, Moshe didn't compose that because of the Chiv of Birkas HaMazon. Because Moshe composed that before the Torah was given. He composed that when the B'Sha'as Yirides HaMan, when the Mun came down. Let's pause for a second and analyze that. We left that sort of as a loose end. What's the idea that Moshe was misaking by the time of the Mamma? We're talking about Birkas HaMazon. That's a different issue. Why was Moshe misaking the bracha? Was he misaking the bracha because of the chiv of Birkas HaMazon, or for a different reason? The answer is that it's a bracha of Shevach for the man. B'Sha'as Yirides HaMan, when the man came down, so then he composed the bracha. When the man came down, it makes sense to say that Moshe composed the bracha for the miracle, for the nes. It's interesting, as we said, that the first bracha is really a blessing of Shevach. It's not Hodayah. Over here, what brought about the bracha of Hazan, even though it was in response to a miracle, but it does not seem that it was a bracha of Hodayah for the nes, which is interesting. Generally speaking, when there's an ace and there's a response in terms of bracha, so there's a chi of hodaya. I'm not going into the whys in this particular case. The bracha itself was a bracha of shevach. And as is, what's the shevach? The shevach is that this is a manifestation. The fact that the Jews had man in the wilderness is a manifestation of a certain quote-unquote aspect. Of course, we're talking about God. We have to be careful what words we use. But God, an aspect of God, that is to say in the sense that God's creation, God creates in such a way that every being has what it needs. That God provides sustenance for everything that he creates. Now, it is true that in this particular case, it was an ace. It was alpin ace. And the bracha of Hazan is not really talking about an ace. It's talking about the natural order, because it says, "Who knows in lech b'chol bacha?" He provides for everything. When we say he provides for everything, we don't mean to say miraculously. It means to say that there's a whole system, laws of nature, ecosystem, and everything is worked out with the greatest perfection, so every being has what it needs, in a natural kind of a way. So what is the connection between the two? It seems a little bit strange, because the catalyst for this is an ace. The man was an ace. Shinui teva. Yeah, the nes, as the Ramban says, with regard to Yetzias Mitzrayim, why the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim are of such great significance. And I explained, like the Rambam says, that the whole secret of Yetzias Mitzrayim has to focus on the nisans and its lows. That's the essence. Because it's not that these nisim are essential, that is to say that without them we wouldn't know about God. That's not the case. Because many philosophers maintain that there must be a God, there must be a source behind the system. But really it has to do with a different question. The relationship between the source, the source, let's put it that way, is the source the creator or just the first cause, so to speak? Is it a cause or creation? And that's a very huge issue. Because many philosophers believe that there's a God, but they maintain that he's the cause of that which is in existence. And therefore, they attributed to the world, to the system, the laws of nature, necessary existence. It's necessary existence. That's the whole question. Is the world that we encounter necessary existence or not necessary existence? Meaning it's created, didn't have to exist. It only exists by virtue of the will of the Creator. It's not something which is co-eternal with the Creator, even though it's subordinate to the Creator. Now, of course, the crucial issue, the nafkamina, so to speak, in this philosophical debate would be the issue of nisim, miracles, shinui hateva. Yahadus is founded upon the idea of shinui hateva. That is to say that there can be a change in the natural law. There can be miracles. According to the philosophical model, there can't be because it's necessary existence. It has to be this way. So that's essential. But if you maintain that it doesn't have to be this way, that God created everything yesh me'ayin from nothing, and God established the system, and God retains absolute control over the system, so God can change it. Now, of course, that shouldn't be taken lightly. We shouldn't just disparage the system, obviously. Olam kimin hago noeg. It's very important. The laws of nature are very, very important. They serve a very significant purpose. They exist because of the will of God. It's interesting. This, I just thought of it recently, has a lot of bearing on the Rambam's Shita. The Rambam holds that in Yemos HaMashiach, in the Messianic era, the laws of nature will not be changed. Olam kimin hago noeg. The only change will be with regard to Shibud Malchus, that is to say, the position of the Jews. The Jews will no longer be a subservient people. They'll be the dominant people, and they'll usher in an era of tremendous prosperity and peace and so forth. But that all will operate through the natural order. So the natural order is very important. It plays a significant role. However, above and beyond that is the Creator, and everything operates in accordance with the will. The Alma Divara Chiruse, the world that he created in accordance with his will. It is the way it is because that's the way he willed it to be. And thus, he retains complete control over it. So that the man is a reflection of the idea that the universe is the way it is because there's a being of infinite wisdom who designed it with the greatest possible, the greatest, it's a minuscule kind of a term, infinite chachmah. So that it sustains. It's tuvo hagadol. It's God's goodness. That the world as we know it is a reflection of tuvo hagadol. It's not just something that has to be the way it is, arbitrary. It's with tremendous wisdom and with design, tuvo hagadol. So the man is a manifestation of the power of God and tuvo hagadol. But even in the wilderness, it's necessary. These people have to be in the wilderness, and these people have to have food. So the Creator provides food for them in the wilderness. But from that phenomenon, this is not the permanent situation. It causes you to reflect on the source, and it causes you to reflect on the so-called nature of the being, of God, who's the Tuvo HaGadol, who's Zanu Mefarnes, because he established the system, and he created all these beings, and he put them in an environment in which everything has what it needs. So that was a bracha of Shevach. So Moshe Rabbeinu was misaking that as a bracha of Shevach for the nes of the man, but it was the perfect vehicle for Birkas HaMazon. So they had the bracha of Hazan. At that point in time, there was no chiyuv of Birkas HaMazon. So when they ate the man, there's nothing that forces you to say that they said that bracha. Moshe was misaking the bracha of Shevach for the phenomenon. However, once the chiyuv of Birkas HaMazon, v'yachalta v'savata uveirachta, and then there's three brachos, and one is Shevach, Shevach l'Hashem. For what? The fact that he provided you with this food, what's the source? So that was the perfect bracha. There was no need to compose a new bracha, because you had the most perfect bracha. So that resolves that issue. The only thing that remains as we walk away from this area is the mitzvah in its entirety also has reference to Ala Oretz, Hatova, the goodly land, that is to say the land, and the Migdash. And at that point, there was no bracha for the land. At that point, there was no bracha for the Mikdash. And there are two ways of understanding it. Either you had to make reference to it in the Birkas HaMazon, and they did so, but each person did so in his own subjective way, informal, not a regular nusach. However, we raised at the very beginning another possibility. Is it possible to say, I'm going to toss this out as a possibility, because I think that it's supported by the Rashbat, who mentions the Midrash. That is to say, perhaps, that it's true that the brachos are dioraisa, but that they don't come into play. The way we said that the second bracha is different than the first. The second bracha relates to the land, but how does it relate to the land in terms of a hodaya? Hodaya is thanksgiving for something you've received. So that until you have the land, so there's no expression of hodaya. You can't express hodaya for the land until you have it. So the Birkas HaMazon would not be incomplete. Before they entered the land, it's possible to say that the only bracha they could say would be Hazan. The other, it's true that the Birkas HaMazon B'Shalei Musa must include the reference, the appropriate bracha for the land and for the Mikdash, but that doesn't come into play until you actually have those things. So at that point in time, it's complete, because all you have is the fact that God's providing you with food. So you got Yom Shevach. Then when the land comes into the picture, then you have to include the land. Then when the Mikdash comes into the picture, then you have to include the Mikdash. So there would be a certain amount of development. That is to say, to me, it makes sense. What I like about this approach is that for me, it's difficult to understand if the obligation was there on day one, why you didn't have Moshe being Masaka in all three brachos. And if you say that that it would have been revised because of certain things, so why couldn't it be revised? Just like you have Boni Yerushalayim has been revised. They were masaking it when the Mikdash was built, then they lost the Mikdash, so there was a revision. This would be a simple way of learning, that is to say that the brachas were composed at that point in time when the obligation of that bracha came into being. That is the alternative way. But I just want to note again that all the Rishonim that we've studied on the Bavli, they raise this question and they don't suggest this answer. That is to say that they do not want to say that there was ever a time once the mitzvah was given that you could have Birkas HaMazon without the three concepts. Let's put it this way, whether it's in three brachos or not, we're not getting into that, but the three concepts. That is to say, Shevach, then Hodoya al Haaretz, Birkas Haaretz, and Birkas Yerushalayim. All the Rishonim we've learned maintain that that was always there, and the whole issue of Tikkun is purely with regard to the Matbea. So that's the way they learn. For purely theoretical purposes, we've considered a different possibility, and the Rashbas alludes to that possibility, that there are those who learn that way. In summation, tying up some loose ends. The difficulty, of course, is the other Rishonim have said that Birkas HaMazon, the Chiv of Birkas HaMazon, contains three ideas. It has to have Hazan, it has to have Birkas HaAretz, and it has to have Yerushalayim. Now, for them, of course, the problem is, so what did they do before Yehoshua came along, and what did they do before David and Shlomo came along? Now, the answer that they give is not without problems, but what they're basically saying is that the Chiyuv existed, and people fulfilled that, each person in his own way. The formalized Nusach, all the Gemara means to say is that when they inherited the land, so Yehoshua composed a formalized Nusach. And then later on, David and Shlomo, on Boni Yerushalayim. However, the question is, so what did people do? What did they say? Or, put a different way, if the Chiyuv existed for the Birkas HaAretz, and Yerushalayim. So why didn't they fall? Why then was the formulation contingent upon a historical event? That wouldn't seem to make any sense if you say that the whole bracha is really Hodaya ala Oris, and then the Chiyuv doesn't come into existence. The Torah is just pointing the way that when that phenomenon occurs, then you have a Chiyuv to incorporate. That's the Midrashos. That's the way the Rashbat is learning. But if you say no, that the obligation exists inherent in the Chiyuv Birkas HaMazon from day one. So if that's the case, so why weren't they misaking the bracha right away? What's the reason behind that? At that point, each person says it his own way. But then Yoshua came along when they inherited the land. Why is the inheriting the land the catalyst for the composition of the formalized text? Since you're telling me that the chiyuv to mention or praise God for the land existed even before you inherited, so now the inheriting of the land is that what's significant in terms of the composition? And the same would be true for the Mikdash. If you have to have a bracha in there beforehand, so then be misakim one. And to answer that question, I think what the Rishonim mean is that the idea of the Oretz, the idea of making reference to the land, is part of the mitzvah. But the most perfect form of that would be in the form of a hodaya. Of hodaya for something which you've received. So that before you actually have the land, you have to make reference to the fact. But that reference cannot be in its most perfected form. There's an element that's lacking. We didn't receive it yet. So whether it's something that they prayed for, that they'll get the land, maybe that's the way they expressed it. By the way, there's other things that they give Hodaya for. It's not just the land. Because what the Gemara says, if you didn't say Bris and Torah, whoever didn't say Bris and Torah didn't fulfill his obligation. Which is to say that that's part of the hodaya for the land. It's not just a physical entity. It's really hodaya. The essential hodaya is the essential way in which Noda is differentiated from Hazan is that in Hazan you're talking about God's providence with regard to the entire world, all of mankind. Here, the second bracha is with regard to God's selected people, God's relationship to Klal Yisrael, that God separated us and gave us a specific system by which to live by, and that's all part of the land. It's not the land per se. Which is because it says whoever didn't say if you omitted Bris and Torah, the whole idea.
I don't know where did they get that from.
That shows you that how significant that the idea of a land per se, like other people look at a land or a homeland, devoid of the entire purpose. Which is expressed through Bris and Torah is an absurdity. So, they had Bris, they had Torah before they had the land. But apparently, the bracha b'shlei Musa, the bracha in its perfect form, has to include that expression of divine providence that God gave us a land in which we could set up a specific type of a society. So until that point in time, they had to make reference to that. But since all the elements weren't there to make the bracha complete, there was no formalized composition. Once the elements were there, that's when they decided. Nod l'cha, al shechat l'avseinu, eretz chem b'tova. And I would say the same thing with regard to the third one. With regard to the third one, the key bracha is a tefillah, as we said, it's a bakasha. But the bakasha is that God should retain, that God should maintain Malchus Beis David and Yerushalayim. Now the system has reached its perfected form. So that's the true form of the third bracha. So until they actually conquered it, so each person said it in his own way. When they conquered it, that's when you had the composition. However, a change took place with regard to the third bracha. And that is because of exile. So once they went into exile, then they were forced to make a change. And for the restoration. So that's different than the situation beforehand. before they conquered Yerushalayim, before they built the Beis HaMikdash. So they, it's theoretically possible. I mean, they prayed for it. They prayed for it. But it had not yet come into existence. Once it came into existence, so then the bracha was composed that it should remain in existence. The only thing is that once it was destroyed, so they didn't want to remove, you couldn't remove the third bracha. So then they switched it to a bakasha that it should be restored.